You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. I don't know why my screen, it looks powdery or something. I don't know if that helped, but it's usually like a camera issue or something. Anyway, I hope you guys can see me out there. I was telling the engineer I am black. And you know, we do need a lot of light around our skin. Let me see what, I don't know what that is, you guys. I am so sorry. Let me see if I can. How's that? Is that a little bit better? Is that a little better? Okay. Hey, everybody. Hey, my kindreds out there. Welcome to 15 Minutes of Show, LA Talk Radio. I am Osiris, your host for today. We have an incredible guest. I know everybody is, I don't know if everybody is, but a lot of people are focused on the Diddy trial. I am, being in Hollywood since 1982, I don't really want to hear anything about Hollywood right now. I am like so burned on Hollywood and all the negative stuff. For those out there, psychic readers, tarot readers, and you guys picking up certain aspects of Hollywood, there is a dark part of Hollywood, and there's also a very light aspect of Hollywood creatively. There are people actually here that are good, decent people that you may or may not hear about. They are production people. A lot of them don't want to be in front of the cameras. They are not actors and actresses. Their jobs are behind the scenes, and they run a lot of business in Hollywood without being recognized. So I want people to understand that also, if you don't live here, you don't have industry expertise, and you just had some kind of small experience with the industry, like maybe your child wanted to get into the industry and you had a bad experience, and that's what you took as a pictorial view of what Hollywood is. It is a lot of stuff. And a lot of Hollywood has been built on very, very, very old money. And that old money is regenerated and rekindled into a lot of things, whether you out there understand that or not. I've been in the industry. I grew up in the industry. I was like in my mid-20s when I first got to LA. I'm way past 60 now. So I've been in it that long and never stopped. I didn't go in and say, oh, yeah, I'm going to do entertainment. And then when I lost my job, I got out of it. I didn't do that. I just stuck in there and went through all the trials and tribulations of no money and no job and being creative and all the other things that go along with working here and being in the industry. But please reserve some of the judgment of Hollywood based on Diddy's trial. A lot of people are not like that. And a lot of people have made a lot of contributing efforts and things that have really helped move people like myself and other people that are creative through the Hollywood trails, I would say. So wait, for today, we are going to talk a lot about multidisciplinary people, people that have a lot of disciplines in their work, their creative work. Our guest has a, let me see if I got it right. He has an Associates of Science degree in journalism. He has a BS, Bachelor of Science in Human Services, and a Master's of Science in Mental Health Counseling. His name is Michael Judkins. Michael also is a film maker. He's producer, director. He's had a many broad experiences in the industry, which is why I'm talking to you about not judging people, because some of these people you may not hear about because they are not a celebrity status. They cannot afford PR people to drive their name out there on social media and to put them on the cover of magazines and to get them this interview and that interview. That's what people that are celebrities and people that are very, very good working actors, they're able to afford those things. And then you have people like me that have taken a long time and people like Michael, perhaps, that have just gone the let's just say the untraveled road, the one that has the least amount of problems and issues and all those things. So we are going to bring on Michael right now. Michael, are you there? Hey!
How you guys doing? Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello.
Hey. So I wanted to talk to you about you have a film called Lonely Girl.
I do.
And I was interested in why you named the film Lonely Girl. And then I want to talk to you about how you combine your disciplines and your talent in the industry with all of the other mental health services that you provide. Now, before you talk, let me say this to everyone out there. There's a lot of mental health problems in the industry. And the reason is, just so you understand, before we talk to Michael, so you don't get yourself confused again, people in the industry are put in the industry because of their talent. It doesn't necessarily mean they're educated. It doesn't necessarily mean their mom and dad didn't come from Hoogalooga, wherever, before they got in the industry. These people are presented with money. They're presented with a package deal. And when you are someone that does not have the education, the emotional, the intelligence, and you're approached by somebody at age 12, and your parents are starving, and you're starving, your parents see, then a lot of times people may make poor decisions. They may not be able to afford the best attorneys when they come into the industry, as they may be able to do down the line when they start making money and their names get a little bit more out there. So just to be fair, that's kind of what happens. People are often pulled into the industry without necessarily knowing anything about the industry, simply because they have talent. So they haven't been prepared. Nobody's told them, look, you're going to have to meet, I'll say Clive, because I'm still waiting to hear what's going to happen with Clive's karmic industry and the things he's put out around here, positive, negative, or otherwise. And that's the way it goes. That's how it usually happens. It's a career that has to be built. It does not happen overnight. All right, Michael. So let's talk about your career in film and production and directing. How did you get into that, and what prompted you to make Lonely Girl?
Shit. So my talent started developing in high school as far as being a writer and kind of understanding how to put words to a page. I started actually in the music industry when I was about 18, 19 years old. I was back in that day. It was called street promoters, if you remember that term. Record labels had street teams, and that used to go out and be that direct link to the audience, be that, you know, getting people, whether it's the clubs or getting people to buy an artist CD or passing out free music to people at clubs. So I started in the industry of music that way, and I was working with Penalty Records. At that time, it was Penalty Records. They're disbanded by now. But at that time, Penalty Records had Capone and Noriega as hip hop artists. So I was giving out those cassettes of Capone and Noriega single. I was one of those guys out there on the streets doing that stuff. So that brought me into working into the club scene a little bit, to where I was working with Sammy Z Productions, doing events. Working at Club Vertigo, getting people in. So I was doing that stuff in the music. And then I ran into a choreographer who I became friendly with, and I actually started learning more about the other industry from the dancers. And then I've been to a couple of videos. I actually was at the Little Kim Crush on You video shoot. So I started learning from there. And then I started managing two acts. One R&B singer and then a reggae artist. So we was headed a couple of traction there and building up someplace northeastern. And that was my introduction to music as far as getting an understanding the business side of it. And I took a break, went to school. I wanted to make sure I get my degrees because that's something I wanted to do and have something substantial as a foundation for myself. So I went and made sure I did that. Was still being connected to the entertainment or anything when writing. And then in 2024, oh my God, look at that, 2014, I got my writing out professionally. I released my first poetry book, which was the Introduction to Sentiment to Me. And as I was writing my second poetry full collection, I sent the poem in to AOS 21 Media House Publishing for one of their anthologies. They was looking for writers for the anthology. Sent it in. They actually sent me a letter back saying I was going to be put, my piece was going to be put in an anthology. I was like, wonderful.
Oh, wow.
Got me,
that's
Right. I'm going to copy the book. I was like, woohoo. And then 2 months after that, I got a call from the publisher, from AOS 21 Media House. And they called me and I was speaking with them and they was like, you know, we like the piece. And they started talking to me a little bit more. And I guess he wanted to try it out and they signed me. I was signed to them for 5 years under contract with that media house as one of the creatives. They took me on 2 book tours. Their corridor was that DMC market. So they had that market down there. So I used to go on a couple of tours down there. I would hit like 2 or 3 bookstores in Baltimore, DC. Then they took me to Virginia. And so I was doing that for a couple of times. And my book, The Interlude to Sentimental Me, came out under that company. And it was ebook and print. And I mean, I'm gonna keep it real. Sometimes a book could get sold and sometimes a book do not get sold, even if you put it out, right? But that poetry, very true. that poetry collection, for a poetry collection for me, that book sold well. And I was actually impressed because I really went deep into that book. I got Rain to give me an insert on if anybody's experienced a rape and abuse, because it was some strong pieces in there. And that organization came on board and had me, you know, let me put that insert from their company. And I was really appreciative of that. So when the book came out, it was great. And then what I did was I actually, and this is getting to Lonely Girl. It all intertwines. Yeah. So when I was writing the Interlude to Sentiment to Me, like I said, it was finished. I wanted to do a stage play. So I actually took 16 poems from that 40 book collection and I turned them into characters and merged dialogue with poetry. So it sold out 2 nights. I got press up here where I live at in Pennsylvania. And I'm actually about to bring the play back next year. So it's actually about to be revived again next year. And that pretty much changed the landscape for me because I had to act how the writing of it is in the dramatic scenes. That's where one of the poems will come out. So the actors, while they're acting, instead of going breaking into a song, they're actually breaking into one of the poems, and they're acting out that emotion with one of my poetry. So I got a lot of great reviews, and I'm bringing that production back next year. So I'm excited about that. So getting to Lonely Girl, I've been doing productions on film. I when I got with music, done that for a while. When I moved out to Pennsylvania, I got connected with film more in a sense. I got a job out here as a film script supervisor on a project. That was the first role I really did besides. And then after that was production assistance and then more production management. That's my steal. I like production management. Yeah. And the producing end of things. So that's where my elevation was going eventually. And so I did a couple of independent projects with a couple of different people. I also was, I did a Hallmark. I was one of the crew members when Hallmark came out here. They invited a bunch of us to go out and do a Christmas episode. So
that must have been interesting.
Oh, it was very interesting. Because you know they got a budget and they got a large budget, right?
What did they not to interrupt your flow, but what did they have you do when you came out? What did you get out of that? Like if somebody said, oh wow, if that happens to me, what is the process and applying you out and what happens after that?
Interesting enough, the producing team it was a Christmas special that family got selected. And for them to have a Christmas and decorate their house. So it was a nice, beautiful house out in the the west end of Pennsylvania. And it was, you know, the lights around there, they was coming to do decorations. It was decoration holiday, something like that. They want to surprise the family. It was so nice. They had the crew, but the producing crew that came out was from LA. And when they came out, and a lot of the crew was local, so they, you know, they bring local crew and some of the other crew. And I actually came on board as a grip and helping out with some of the stuff in the grip. And interesting enough, my personality, my character, if I'm too quiet, people know something's wrong with me, right? So I don't talk a lot, but I talk. I'm very personable.
You have something to say when you
talk. Yeah, I'm very personable and talking. it was interesting because, you know, everybody's hanging around. Everybody, if you've ever been on a film set, sometimes, a lot of times, a lot of people is always looking at what the next person's doing. You know, you kind of looking and stuff, and people was looking. And I remember it was lunchtime, and they was out there for like a week. I worked on that set for 4 days because I had another set to go to. But I worked on that project for 4 days. And one of the days, I think it was day two, people was like hanging around. It was lunchtime, almost craft services. So what I did, and take heed of this, you might not think it's the simple things. So while everybody was kind of like hanging out, starting to chill, I kind of walked down, got me a water, and then I just kind of stood in the street, like waiting, like, okay, lunch is over, it's time to get back to work. So I was the only one standing there, and one of the producers that was from the LA team actually literally walked up and was like, "Hey, looks like you back from lunch." I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "I like that. Would you mind telling them to come back to work?" And literally after that, I don't know, for some reason, the producing team, they will come to me. "Hey, and I just became kind of like this slash production coordinator on a thing. And it was just more the sense of, even though it's a fun job and it's creative, professionalism.
Keyword, professionalism.
Don't slack off. I mean, don't think like, you know, it's a lot of moving parts, but that one thing to where you want to always be is be professional. So, respecting your time, respecting other people's time, you know, and really being mindful of what you're doing and being open and asking a lot of questions. So that kind of answers that part. And going into Lonely Girl, just being into Lonely Girl, Lonely Girl was actually supposed to be a poem in this collection I'm talking about, the Interludes of Sentiment to Me. And I couldn't write it. I had the title. And so for some reason, nothing wouldn't come out on paper for me. So I called a music collaborator of mine, and he was a guitarist, singer, songwriter. So I said, "Listen, I have this idea. I don't know what to do with it." So we came and we actually wrote lyrics to Lonely Girl. So it's actually a record of Lonely Girl, a soundtrack that I wrote. The song Lonely Girl, and the concept literally of it was, I was I was in my house at that time, and I'm drinking some wine on the balcony, and my sister calls me, and she's yeah about her husband, and then I'm on the phone and I get the boop, and then I click over, "Hello, it's the husband," and he's on the phone like so I got both of them on the phone. So I was just, once I got the phone with them, literally that's where Lonely Girl came in. I had the lyrics, I had the theme, and then when I did, I started to think about it more, like, oh, so there was a poem, it didn't develop into a poem. I changed it to a song, the song came about, and then when I was in another production, I went to a casting the week after, and I seen the actress that I worked with before locally out here in Pennsylvania. And she was telling me, she just came up to me and was like, "Hey, Mike," I was talking. She's like, "You know what? I feel so typecast." You know, she's a Hispanic, Latino Hispanic woman, very talented, theater and film. And she has a great accolade to herself. And when she said that to me, I went home that night. And this is a true story. I tell this. And I went home that night and I started writing the script, Lonely Girl. And I called this actress the next week and I said, "Tatiana, I have an idea. I have a script. I'm going to contact you when I'm done." And I know it's a short film. You could get done in a month. Within a year, I called her because I had other things going on. I had a finished script. I let her read it. I already had part of the funding. And she read it and she was like, "Yeah." And she became my lead. So Lonely Girl had a lot of buildups to develop it. And the premises of the movie itself is really, you know, being standing up for yourself, right? Even in love, right? Sometimes we have to make choices to where we have to choose us. And we have to understand that being in a relationship means being in a relationship as a partnership, right? So it was having all those different elements of, you know, one woman trying to find her way and then the husband's not allowing that. Right. And then she's finding out at the end, I can do what I want to do. And that's what the whole premises of Lonely Girl came about.
And also the fact that we can be in relationships with someone and still feel alone.
That's you know, right.
You don't feel like there's no one there. I mean, there's no one for me to talk to or no one for me to relate to. And then you have all so many different dynamics of a relationship. People outgrow each other. They're not growing at the same pace. And one is slower than the other. One is doing this. And blah, blah, blah. You know, and that it is. I marvel at couples or anyone that's trying to have a relationship. It is not easy.
It's not.
For those people that are brave enough to stick to it and you're still with the same person in 15, 16, 18. My hat is off to you, honey, because I like it.
I love it. So that's how Lonely Girl came about, you know, and it's we won. We won a lot of festivals.
Award-winning
director,
award-winning filmmaker, director, producer. Yeah. You guys, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to neglect that.
No, so but you know, don't even be sorry. You know, I don't even boast that much. People be telling me, they be like, "Why you don't say that?" I'm like, I just don't boast it so much. I mean, like, you know, to me that accolade when you go into film festivals, and I used to be a film festival judge. Sure. So I used to be a judge at the Northeast Pennsylvania Film Festival. And I know how it is to sit there and critique thousands of films to come in.
How is it? We don't know. I've never been a film judge.
Depending on your film festival which you work with, it usually works on point system. So you're looking at production, sound, visual, choreography, if there's any. You're looking at wardrobe and aesthetics. You're looking at is continuity, right? You have to look at continuity, and there's all different points, and everybody gets different points because every film is different and unique, right? So there's my interpretation might be that, but your interpretation is going to be something else. So, you know, that's subjective. It's film. So it's that's a great experience to have. If anybody in the audience, I would recommend, if you're a filmmaker or creative, see if you can do one season of a film festival as a judge. That gives you great experience of just looking at different points in films to even help your own career to be like, oh, I didn't even see that before. Oh, let me take a note of that. Okay, so because that's what it did for me too. It helped me see things differently. Like even my own project, I'd be like, I should not have done that. Now I see. And it happens. It happens. But it was a good experience. It was a good experience.
Well, speaking of film, we are going to announce my incredible sponsor, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, Senior Real Estate and Probate Specialist, 818-571-1508. My beautiful, sweet soul, Kevin Pike, Senior Real Estate and Probate Specialist at Coldwell Banker. Kevin is the go-to. I mean, when I say he's a good person, he's a good person. He's not going to be one of the people you meet and then he changes personality and then you find out he's been cheating you and things like that. It's not going to be like that. He is stand-up kind of guy. And for all your real estate needs, please call him again at 818-571-1508. Now back to our guest, Michael Judkins, award-winning film producer, director, poet, mental health counselor. He has all of these different hats. So you were talking about the judging part of now. Have you ever judged the Cannes Film Festival?
I have not. I would love to do that one day. Yeah. I just need one day.
Well, speaking of Cannes, I want to do a shout out to Cannes because this year we had a 95-year-old Hollywood relic treasure gold, as far as I'm concerned, June Squibb. Do you guys remember June Squibb? Mm-hmm. She just did she's 95 now. She just did a movie with Scarlett Johansson called, I think it's called Eleanor the Great. Oh, and she was in that movie. But the young, I love it when the young people give their respect to the people that have gone on before them, and those people inspire us to keep going, because one day if you live long enough, you're going to get to age 95. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you live long enough, you will get there. So the fact that we have people ahead of us that can inspire us to move forward, I just wanted to give a shout out. So Michael, back to you now. when you did Lonely Girl and you were doing a compilation of all these different things, what was going on in your personal life to inspire you to move in that direction? What was happening?
I think for me at that time, it was a lot of things going on. There was emotionally, I was at a good place, stable and that stuff financially. I'm just keeping my head on my shoulders. But there was also the changes in where, for me, I was identifying, if I'm going to take this serious, I need to be serious about it. It was that time for me. So that's why my company name is called OC14 Entertainment, because that is the acronym. So October of 2014 is when my writing went professional. So that's how my... No, I'm a Cancer.
So, oh, like me, yay!
I'm a Cancer. So yeah. that was my dedication to myself. That's why I named my company OC14 Entertainment LLC, because that's my reminder to tell myself that you made a promise to say that was the year and the month that your writing went professional, and it's been that way since. So each year is different. I'm learning a lot of new ways of doing stuff. Like I can say, at that time, I was still kind of like in between of, do I want to build in film, or should I go back into music, right? So even as a creative, I was going back. I'm a poet. I could do all these different things, but then I was like, I have to have a focus, right? So that's when I really made myself to build my writing skills back up and start writing more screenplays. After Lonely Girl, I did A Familiar Face. I did Wallace. I worked as a producer on Nanako. That's about to get released. It's a horror film.
Oh, wow.
It's coming to theaters and streaming soon.
What is the name of the film?
It's called Nanakoke.
Nanakoke.
Yep. Nanakoke. Yep. It's actually a town. We filmed it in the town of Nanakoke, Pennsylvania. So it's there.
And it's coming out on the end. It's going to be running the circuit of films that we can see it at the theaters and all that.
Yeah, the EP just told me that they're going to do a short run and streaming. So it should be. I'm waiting for those dates to come out.
And so
I'm waiting for those dates to let me know. I was a producer on that project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted people to be clear. So you produce and you direct. So if someone came to you with a film project, you are like a Steven Spielberg coming up the ranks, that you could take them and turn their idea into a full-blown film.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use any AI or any of the new ChatGPT technologies to do this now with your iPhone, or you're still doing it the old school way? How's that going? How do you do yours?
Well, a lot of different ways. So I've never been the one to shy away from new technology, even since I was a kid. Yeah, since I was a kid. When the beepers came out, I had one. When the phones came out, one, I had them. When the computer came, one, I had it. You know, like it was just, so I loved it. I loved it. I loved learning.
Yeah.
And to me, as first, ethically and professionally, to me, AI is not a threat. And once you learn it and you can manage it and you can navigate it, cool. It's kind of like, to me, like the spell check on your Microsoft Word, right? Like you write something, you spell check it and you correct it. You take suggestions, you fix it. You can either take the suggestion or don't take the suggestion, right? And believe it or not, a lot of high budget movies are added. They add AI into their footage. So nowadays, so
I found it on the phones and I didn't know they're audit. Just so you guys know out there, AI and ChatGPT are already built into your phones, your televisions, your computers, whether you are using it, I'll say consciously or not. It is there. I would suggest if you're going to live in the modern day world, rather than saying, oh, I refuse to do this and that, it's not going to go away. I would suggest you go on YouTube, talk to a friend or somebody that knows about technology. You grab one of these kids from high school or something and ask them how you can become user friendly, at least know what it is. So you're not sitting up there every day being afraid of something. Oh, it's going to take us over. It's going to mark this and that, you know.
Yeah, so
you're already taking over.
I like it. So I use it when it's appropriate. And then I actually have a colleague of mine who actually wants to do one of my projects on iPhone. And I'm actually interested in doing that because looking at the research on it, and I'm one of those too that's like, oh, how would that work? Like I'm curious to see how that works. And I see other people do it, and it came out really well. So people are doing it. There's a scene actually in the Hulk. I think it's the Hulk that the director used the iPhone. No, they used the iPhone.
I didn't know that.
And I think it was the Hulk or one of the Marvel movies. The director, he has, oh my God, I forgot the director, but he did this interview and I was watching it. And he was like, mm-hmm. Yeah, you could see them with the phone. They had the whole dolly and everything, and it's just the phone going on. And
yeah,
iPhone. But
it's brilliant.
For me, I think it all depends on the creator and then what they see. Like, I have a film right now I'm in development with, and we start filming in mid fall 2025. And this is Steve Brodsky, living in Allentown, and he's a singer songwriter out here in Allentown. And we stay. So Steven, this is a great example of what you just asked me, if people come to you. So Steve and I actually met before a while ago. We did a couple of projects, and I used to manage him for a little while and do A&R on one of his albums. So I used to do music as well still too. So we kept a working relationship, and about a year and a half, a year and a half, he came to me and was like, because he knows I do the filming. Like I said, we do projects together, and I wouldn't say older man. I would say he's a mature man. That's how I would say, like, a mature man, mature woman, right? Mm-hmm. So he still gigs. So he's like, he came to me one day, was like, Mike, I have an idea. He's like, listen, I want to do a movie about my life, and I want you to do it. I'm like, oh, okay, that's a big ask at first. And I was like, all right, let's do it. Him and I worked on a script for a year. I was writing and working on a script for him for a year, every other week, almost every week for a whole year, getting into his head, figuring out his story on a deeper level. So now we have a script. We've been crowdfunding and development and trying to raise some monies and talking to donors, and it's under fiscal sponsorship with From the Heart Production. So people donate to the film, it's a tax deductible on it. So now we're just trying to build it up, and it's not to where it's full budget, but it's a project, it's a passion project to where we're still going to do the film. We're getting it done. So I'm gonna have some creators coming in that's coming in on a back end type of situation. And then working on it there. So in that film, I'm doing a short run and streaming once it's all produced and run. Yeah. And I liked about that because it's, I think one of the things I learned and I want to continue learning, because I don't ever consider myself an expert. I am a student learner, and I'm okay with being a student learner because I don't want to
always.
I'm okay with that, always. You know, but it's, I would say within the last year, a lot of things changed for me. Not in the worst way. I mean, life happens, but creatively, something is happening right now. I don't know if I'm getting more recognized or more noticed or whatever it is. I'm not an attention seeker, so that part I don't really care about. But the projects I'm starting to get, or the companies I'm starting to build relationships with, that is starting to look different now than it was a year ago. So that's why I'm looking at it in a sense of, and I said it a little bit earlier, when we look at that kind of like everything from like top to bottom, right? Like, is it for you? Is, you know, what are you doing with it? That kind of thing. So it's a work in progress. I call it, I'm a work in progress.
Did you see Sinners by Ryan Coogler? What did you think of it if you saw it?
I didn't see it. No, I've been hearing about it.
What do you think of his work in general? I met him when he first one at the Fruitvale Station in Oakland. That's when I met him, when he first started out here. They had him out here doing a thing for The Wrap. It's a media outlet out here in L.A. And I met him when he was very young. And now to see him have grown. And to be honest with you, he has opened the door for more film producers like you and directors to come in behind him and give us a much broader aspect of Black culture versus everybody's a crackhead, everybody's mama and daddy was drug addicts and all that. It is so much more to Black culture than that. I get so tired of that one lean, that one thing, and that we're all been in the streets and all of that. Yes, a lot of us have had rough times, but it doesn't mean that we have all been in the streets and that we came from these. My parents were married almost 69, 70 years. You know, I'm from one of those. I come from an old that you don't leave your husband, and you know, and they were good people. They were, you know, my dad wasn't out running the streets and stuff on my mom, but they were those kind of people that believe that you stick together and you build a family. That's especially right. with those generations coming directly out of slavery. You know, that family is broken up and trying to mend and heal those broken things. So right. for people like you, Michael, do you take dynamics of mental health and explore them in the world of poetry and writing? How do you blend that world with your own measure of creativity, I would say?
Yeah, I do that in a couple of different ways. Like in one way, I do an annual event called Arts and Care. It's the third year this year coming up. And Arts and Care is exactly that. And that's the premises on the build up for my event. It's a merger of my two worlds coming together of mental health and creativity. So that event, I have presenters, whether it's mental health based or wellness based or spiritually based. I have poets, I have stage theater actors performing a piece, and then I have vendors and things there, and we just talk about arts and care creatively. This year, Arts and Care Year 3, is going to be called Arts and Care Recovery and Movement, and I'm having individuals sharing their individual journeys on mental health, substance abuse, physical therapy, physical disabilities. I'm having a whole transgender community coming in that's going to be doing a set as well too. I have dancers from Born Into the Arts that's coming on that's going to be doing some of the dance movements while the individuals are telling their story. So I'm blending that style for this year Arts and Care event. So that's how I do it. And then one of the things for me, it's and I say this and I hold up my hand to this. Creative arts help me stay mentally stable, if that makes any sense.
Me too, the same thing. Yep. I'm a painter and all that. Yeah, you have to. Yep.
It's my go-to, right? When I'm feeling stressed out. And a lot of times I've been doing mental health and learning about mental health, and I've done therapy for young children to adolescents, to adults, to married couples, to professionals. I worked with kids from 4 years old, and the oldest adult I ever treated was 79. So from within that age all the way up, I worked with a lot of different cultures, financial situations. You know, I worked in a lot of different settings, whether it's outpatient, residential. I worked in the jails. I worked in the courts doing mental health and advocacy. Mm-hmm. And I think as a Black man, for me, a lot of times it's getting more. I like that you're starting to hear it more. People are doing more stuff because it for me, even growing up, I grew up in the Bronx, and it was around Bronx, New York. I don't remember talking about mental health when I was a teenager.
People thought you were crazy.
Remember that. Like if we seen somebody flipping out, honestly, we'll be like, we're not messing with them. They're crazy.
There's something wrong with them.
Yeah. So when I got older and I got into it and I was learning about myself, yes, while I'm learning about mental health and learning how to treat people, I found out so many things that was wrong, right? That we think that was right, right? It's the same thing as like when people have to change their diet when they get older because they say like, oh, all the food that you ate when you was younger is no good. Now you have to change everything, your whole eating pattern. Right, and you're like, what? So all the good food I used to eat growing up, none of that's not good no more for me. It's that change, right? So
yeah,
to me, I'm excited in the sense when people really look into say how they feel and how they take care of themselves, and sometimes it's hard to do that, whether you're with somebody or not with somebody. And I'm talking about not platonic, like a relationship. I'm just talking about being with yourself and yes, saying who do you see when you look in the mirror? Because when you take off the gold and you take off your earrings and you take off your hair or you take off your beard, when you look in the mirror, are you seeing that same person you feel? Right? Like, what is that mirror telling you? Like, one of my things I tell people, when I instruct, I say, well, think about this. when we want food, we go eat food wherever we want. When we want to go shopping, you know how to open your bank account and open your wallet and go shopping all your favorite stores, right? When there's a fire in your house, you call the fireman. What do you do when you're sitting in your house on your couch and you're feeling sad? What do you do? And sometimes a lot of people can't answer that. See? A lot of people can't when they answer, but and then again, think about it. I like how you said that, because you would think, well, if you're sad, if you're going to do that, wouldn't that make you more sad, or is that going to make you happy for the moment? But you're still dealing with whatever you're dealing with, right? And that's that mask that a lot of times we put on as people, just for people won't see who we really are.
We really are. And there's a lot of that. Unfortunately, I was talking to someone a few days ago about purification of the six senses. Ooh. And we deal with five senses, and they're unclean. They're unclean by, you know, the ears filter things, the mouth filters conversation. And a lot of us really don't understand when someone says that you have to purify the six senses so that they aren't slandering. They aren't sullied by some negative thing that we've latched on to, whatever. And to be honest with you, people that really do a lot of spiritual work, they are very tranquil by nature.
Yeah.
There's not, you know, they look to be kind of unevolved, not really involved in everything. And behind the face, there's all of these beautiful exchange of energies and stuff going on within those people. And Mahatma Gandhi, a lot of those spiritual people, they rarely, if you had met him, you'd have just thought he was a regular guy, but he was doing the work of, you know, doing a very highly evolved mission and purpose here on the planet. So when you talk about mental health, I certainly can understand that, you know, being a veteran and all of that. But what I wanted to ask you as well, when you are doing and you're compiling your films and things that you want to work on, and then we're going to do another shout out to the sponsor. What mindset are you in? Are you totally completely shut off from everybody? Do you bring a team of people to work with you? You guys get together, sit at the table and knob it out, you know, throw it around in your mind. What do you do?
So it's depending on what stage. If it's the writing stage of it, and if I'm writing, if I decide to write a project, I just finished my children's book. That's not going to be a children's book anymore. It's going to be a children's audio book. But it's if I'm writing this script for me to produce it or me to go try to sell it, my writing, I'm the 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m., 5 a.m. writer.
You're crazy.
I like to be in a space. I can be in my room, and if I have everything in here, I don't need nothing. I can open a curtain and see the sun, like, hi, people. And I could sit right there and I could get into my headspace. So when I write, before I even go words on a paper, I start developing what I want to write in my head. So I'm classic old school still. I like my act one, my act two, my act three. I like my formatting. I need some structure, and then the technique, and then in my head, I get ideas so much to where I just wrote three more songs last night, lyric wise. And then I have literally, no lie, besides the two features I'm working on now, I have 9 scripts I already wrote from COVID to now that just need editing and a good financial backer. So if you know anybody, please put me up on Oc14 LLC.
Some people, you have to go through some of the technology companies.
They do. And I collaborated with people on scripts. Yeah. I used to be, I was in one writer's room with a comedian, a comedy show that was kind of like a YouTube show, and he had a writer's room. Mm-hmm. And I've done that a little bit before, and I've experienced in that a little bit, but I like to write. So I'm a writer, so I can write it. Sometimes I outsource too. And I don't feel like writing. If I know I want to do a short or a feature film, I'll write my treatment and then I'll hire a writer to finish it. I've done that before.
Well, that's a great idea. Before we got to go back to our sponsor, yay, Kevin Pike, Cold Well, a banker, senior real estate and probate specialist, 818-571-1500. You look at their little cute face. Kevin Pike Caldwell, a banker, senior real estate and probate specialist, 818-571-1500. And now back to our guest, Michael Judkins. Mm-hmm. Michael, wow, it's been really exciting listening to your process and your journey. Where can we find you? We're almost near the end of our show. We have maybe about 7 more minutes, and I want to talk to you a little bit more. But where will we go to find out more about you? Yeah, online, you can do Instagram, Snapchat, any of those. But where are we going?
Yeah, on Instagram, I'm OCT-14Journey. On Facebook, I'm OCT-14Entertainment. Or you can look up Michael Judkins and add me as a friend. My website is OCT-14Entertainment.com. And message me. You got all good ways to reach out to me. I always have communication with people. So those are the best ways to reach out.
Now, you were talking about we're crabs. So the moon is really influential in our lives. You know this. If you're real kid, you know what I'm talking about. So there is very seldom that I get to bed that on an early note, because if it's energy's down there, you're going to do it. Yeah. When you are doing what you do and it comes to you, I know I can be doing this. And it'll something come into mind and say, go do write this. Are you like that where you go down and you just channel and then it stops?
I think I'm a little bit of both, actually, because I can get an idea in a moment, but I don't have no pieces of paper to write it down with, right? I don't have my phone and I want to write it as a note.
Like, don't lose it,
right? But then sometimes I get ideas or I think about things and I'm like, ooh. And then sometimes I have to tell myself to stop, because sometimes it just gets too overwhelming for me, right? Because I can think of projects and do things back to back to back to back, but then I have to sit down. That's the writer and the practical side. That's the writer and that's the writer and the wild side of me. But then the producer in me has to sit down and be like, wait a minute. All right, so let's finish what we're starting here. Let's finish this before you're going over there. Yeah, yeah. So it's such an interesting, like, being creative. I think for cancers, at least for me, I think they was just born to do that. Every cancer that I've ever met
is very innate. Every
cancer that I've ever met, I swear to you, since I was a kid, you might not believe me. They was either creative or we had such a good relationship. I never had a fallout with a cancer ever.
For me, and my brother and sister are all cancers.
Ever. And it's just something about understanding the mood and understanding that, you know, people see me and they'd be like, oh, you're all over the place. And people don't believe me when I tell them I'm really introverted. They'd be like, no way. I'd be like, I'm really
introverted. You're an introverted extrovert.
Yeah. And then people, you have to explain it and be like, well, I can be out, but I know when I'm inside, that's my recharge. So I recharge. You know, as a cancer, I take a lot of emotional stuff throughout the day. So where am I depositing that stuff at, right? So I got to get that stuff out of me. So what I got to do, I got to recharge. So recharge for me could be in the space.
Yeah. And I like that you are a Black man. And I'm saying only because he's Black, you guys. It's not mean everybody else that's a guy or whatever. But I like particularly that you have found a way to handle your emotions and that you found a way to integrate with them without being afraid of feeling very deeply. And a lot of people don't know how to do that. A lot of men have a hard time with being, they think, if I say I love somebody or I cry or whatever, that makes me feel like you're human first.
That's right.
You don't get man and woman until you're born and they look at you and they go, that's a guy, you know, that's a this or whatever. But on the inside, we are all human and we all have emotions. We all have needs, wants, desires. And I like that you are a man and you are a man of color sharing that you can get in touch with these feelings without going out there and channeling them into drugs and running women and being all those kind of things, being a menace to society, I would say, that you have found another way to manage those things in a much healthier way. And I love that you're doing that. I think you should really share that with our worldwide global audience that, yes, there are men out there that can express themselves and they don't necessarily have to be on the gay side in order to be able to express their emotions. There are a lot of creative people that are emotional, sensitive men, and they are not gay, everybody. Just because somebody shows the soft side of them doesn't make them gay all the time. All right. Same thing with women that are assertive or aggressive. You know, it depends on your background, where you were born, how you were raised, what your mindset is, and take those things and make good of them. So, Michael, what can we expect from you next before we go? What else can we do?
I'm working on the Brodsky project right now. We're in development. We start pre-production in July and start filming. So I'm finishing up some scouting and some location. I got the art department on board. So we're gearing up for that. And then I have my arts and care event that's going to be in August. And then I have two fundraisers events with the Brodsky project on May 31st at the Soft Machine Gallery and June 11th. And I'm part of the Ice House, which is a performance house venue. I'm part of the Black Arts Committee there.
So we're able to bring it. There's an Ice House out here in California that was a comedy place that we used to go to all the time.
Really?
Yeah, the Ice House. It was a grounding for the comics back when they were starting out. The Ice House, you know.
I love that. Yeah, we have that in Bethlehem.
We have to go. I'm going to talk to you in more depth and we'll have you back on the show. I would love to have you back.
I would love to be back.
We have to go, but I want to say to everyone out there, please follow Michael Judkins on Instagram, Facebook, wherever you want to find anything about film. I would suggest that if you are of, you know, a person with the mindset, you might want to do film and you might want to go in this direction, please use him as a mentor. You know, look him up, see what he's talking about. I love you because of who you are and what you do for yourself every day. And you show up and I like you for being brave and coming to my show and supporting us. Thanks. Shout out to Sam Hassan from LA Talk Radio. Thanks, Sam, for letting me shine on the show. And also all of you out there, don't forget to smile. It works wonders. And let's thank our guest again, Michael B. Judkins, director and award-winning filmmaker. Please follow him and don't forget about me, Instagram, Osiris_Munir_the painter. And if you just Google my name, you can find out about me. I've been almost everywhere in this world and still moving through. And I'll talk to you soon. Look forward to seeing you next week. Bye, Michael.
Bye, guys. Thank you so much.
Bye.
You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.